Simply Red, A New Flame starts off this Monday morning on West Kent Today with me, John Barton. My guest this morning in the first hour is Laura Toop, and we're going to be talking about grief and celebration. Welcome to West Kent Today. In this hour, Laura and I will be discussing, as I said, grief and celebration. So, Laura, welcome.
Hello, John.
And we've got the Queen's Jubilee coming up.
We have indeed.
And it's all celebration, but only a few months ago we have got these pictures of her sitting alone for Prince Philip's funeral.
Yeah.
And then surrounded by more family for the celebration of his life. But she looked a very sad person indeed, quite naturally at the funeral. Is this now a new time of celebration? Is it the right time for celebration?
Is there ever a right time for celebration? I suppose that is the question. There is definitely lots happen when somebody dies. There's lots of rituals that we go through, and that takes time to process. And so, yes, you describe the Queen sort of sitting there on her own, looking a very sorry figure. But actually, sometimes in our grief, that is exactly what we want to do in order to process the enormity of what has actually happened and to recognise and reflect on the life that has been lost. The thing is, it could be 20 years from now. I mean, assuming the Queen was still alive, but unlikely. And the celebration could still not feel right. But to look at it from a perspective of the person reflecting on, well, the Queen losing Philip, I think for me is the celebration is a celebration of life and the celebration of everything that the two of them did together to get to, you know, this significant milestone that no one else has ever achieved. She will be reflecting on how much Philip played a role in getting her to that place. And whether she would choose to call it a celebration, I don't know, you don't know, we don't know. But a thanksgiving for the support he's given her to this point, that may well be how it is sitting with her right now.
Okay, we're going to come back to that, but we'll probably make it a little bit more personal for our listeners and for ourselves, because we are not immune to grief ourselves.
No.
So, and with me is Laura Toop, who we're talking about grief and celebration. And in the past few weeks, we've had the Partygate scandal, Downing Street, people celebrating birthdays, end of the weeks, and things like that. And quite a lot of reaction from the public about, you know, how dare they have a party when we couldn't even go and visit our loved one in hospital who was dying. And looking back on the last 2 years, there's been a lot of hard times for a lot of people. Now, I'm going back to 2020. At this time, my wife was suffering from cancer and looking much, much older each day and getting more and more infirm, and then she died in the July. But then we could only have 10 people to the funeral. And we thought, right, we'll have a celebration of her life afterwards. But then 2 years or so later, we think, well, why do we want to drag all that up? Going back to our theme of grief and celebration, is there a right time to celebrate? I'm throwing in the deep end.
And I think, as I said earlier on, is there a right time? And I guess it's only right for the person who is experiencing the grief. And so for me specifically, as you know, John, my husband died, almost 7 years ago. It'll be 7 years ago in July. And it wasn't what we were expecting. From diagnosis to dying, it was 11 months. Within that 11 months, it was so full on, because actually he had been told that the cancer wasn't, the tumour wasn't growing, and that then suddenly it was straight into, well, I'm having this major 13-hour surgery, which out of that came, we've got all the cancer, go away, have a nice 10 years of your life. So you can imagine my surprise that, our surprise that, but 2.5 months later, actually, the rate of decline was rapid. And then he was to die at the beginning of July. The immense amount of emotions that were in the build-up to that, then it all goes straight into all the standard rituals of funerals, organising stuff. There's so much to do that you can get busy in all of that. Thinking about celebration right then, forget it. I hadn't got personally the emotional space to be able to think through more than actually just function every single day to do what I absolutely needed to do. So I can't begin to imagine actually delaying a celebration, because actually all of that pain that you felt at the point at which that person has died, the thought of bringing that all back up again, I just don't think I'd want to do it again.
But other people would have expectations and say, you know, we watch the service online from the crematorium, but, you know, we'd like to get together. And part of me would say, oh, please, no.
Yeah. And I think, for me, in my specific situation, what ended up happening was a year later, his work colleagues were really keen to have a service in honour of him, which I did go through, but it was a year down the line. I'd already dealt with a lot of those emotions. It was hard, particularly as I didn't really know many of his work colleagues either, so I felt it was very much something I was just going through the motions and doing for somebody else, whilst not really respecting what I needed and what I felt was right for me. So, you know, I think as I'm saying this out now, I'm sort of sitting there going, why didn't I do something for me? Why did I just go through the motions for somebody else? But I suppose that is so often what we do. We do stuff in expectation that other people need it, whereas in actual fact, we're neglecting ourselves and what we need.
Well, we'll come on to that about how we can care for ourselves in a few minutes. With me this morning on West Kent Today is Laura Toop. We're talking about grief and celebration, and particularly with the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, all the celebrations being planned for that. I don't know how many invitations you've had to street parties and that.
A couple.
Oh. I think I'm close to double figures.
Well, you are the popular person then, John.
Not necessarily me, but people are saying, oh, we're going to do this on such and such a date, would you like to come along? Whether it's the Oaks College in Tunbridge, or our new neighbours in Tunbridge and things like that, or our current neighbours in Tunbridge, you know, or whatever. And I thought, do I really feel like celebrating? But we finished off our last section with about having to look after ourselves, doing something for me, doing something for ourselves. Now, how did you get to that stage?
I think, you know, it's one of those things where when my husband died, he made me promise three things, but the important one was that I would move on, in inverted commas. The thing is when you are the person that's left behind, confronted with a world that you hadn't expected, hadn't asked for, and don't know how to navigate or recognise, that's really, really hard to do. I was 42. I had also lost my health and my career in the same sort of 6 to 8 week period when I lost my husband. So I was definitely thrown into a world I didn't know. But the world around you is so busy doing stuff. There are also lots of expectations of what you are supposed to do. And it's so overwhelming. You know, I felt like I was wading through treacle, living in a parallel universe to the one that everybody else was living in. And if I had one more person tell me, oh, do this, do that, and I'm just going, but how is that going to help me? How is that going to save my life? And it was one of those things where ultimately I had to find a space of peace and quiet. I mean, as it happened, it was 5,000 miles away in the middle of the Caribbean on an island called Aruba. But I had to stop the world. I had to find a space where I could hear my own voice. And I think that's the thing, that when so much is going on around us and there's so much implied expectation about what you should do, to find that space is exceptionally hard to do. But it is only in finding that space, in listening to our own voice, that we can really actually start to navigate grief in a way that feels right for us, because it is our experience of grief. It is not anybody else's experience. It is us who have lost that person. Only us knows the relationship that was lost and the meaning it has to our lives and how we want to take that forward. So in a world where it is going to be busy over the, you know, the many street parties, and, you know, do I go and join my sister and her family and four kids? Do I go and join the street? Actually, sometimes I might actually just go and find a quiet corner, which sounds really miserable. But actually, sometimes that's just what I need, to find that quiet space where I can hear myself think and think about myself, what I needed, what I'm reflecting on, the moments that have come into my life and have influenced my life to this point.
I get the same sort of feeling that, almost remembering what the events of 2 years ago, and then the celebrations and the conflict there is. I don't want to be antisocial, but, you know, these memories are raw. And, having that space is important. And I think what you picked up on is that other people have expectations of us.
Yes.
And many of them are unrealistic.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to that in a few minutes. With me this morning on West Kent Today is Laura Toop. We've been talking about grief and celebration. We're going to just move the conversation on a little bit now by saying people's expectations of us when someone dies are sometimes unrealistic. But what about the person who has died? Have they got expectations of us? Have they made their wishes known? Laura, in your case.
Well, certainly in my case, I think, you know, I remember very vividly, and saying this before, that Chris clearly knew that this was going to be the last time he was going to hospital, and he sat down on the sofa and he made me make three promises. Probably the hardest one was that I was to move on with my life, which, you know, but what does that look like? Moving on is something that we're often told when we're in our grief, and it's like, how do you do that while still respecting the person? And actually, I still want to be with this person. I don't want to move on. The other two things were very, very specific. One was that I would actually complete the renovation project that he'd begun. And the other one was that I would continue my quest, which we had been looking at together, to have a child. But would, you know, it was, I think, 9 days later that he actually died. And then you're thrown into this world that you're navigating so many things you hadn't expected. To go back and think about those three promises, it's all very well when that person is alive, but you're thrown into a whole conundrum of different challenges now. One, you're on your own, obviously. Secondly, you've got a whole load more things. The person that you are has actually fundamentally changed from the person that you were when they were alive. All of that needs to be processed before you can begin to consider living up to the expectations that you've agreed with the person who's now not there anymore. You know, the biggest question is, well, how am I going to do that on my own? Of course, we then go out to try and fill the space with almost as if we're just a jigsaw puzzle that isn't quite complete. We're going to go out and find some pieces to fill that jigsaw puzzle. But as I said, the jigsaw puzzle's not the same anymore.
No.
And so you can't just go out and find a piece to put it in the space that was made empty, because it's not the same jigsaw puzzle. I wasn't the same person. I had to work out what I needed for myself and what moving on, in inverted commas, looked like for me. 7 years on, I have moved on but in doing so, I feel I have honoured Chris's memory, and very much he has left imprints on my heart that will be there forever. And he continues to be my inspiration, my source of guidance, albeit that he's not physically with me anymore. I did actually live in a different county when he died. Since then, I have moved 90 miles around the M25 to Kent. I did do the renovation project, but on a different house.
So how did you feel about doing the renovations? Did you have the enthusiasm?
I didn't have quite the same enthusiasm. Particularly when the builder said he was bankrupt, and that this was just at the point he'd knocked out the back wall, and as I stood in my hallway, I could see all the way through the floorboards, all the way to the loft, and he said, oh, by the way, the 30 grand that you thought had bought windows is no more. All right, okay. At that point, I think my lack of interest for the renovation project that Chris and I were doing up in Hertfordshire, he was kicking my backside and saying to me, well, it serves you right, Laura. You should have listened to me. So now you've got it, and you've really got to sort it out. But I did sort it out, and I have sorted it out. But I actually ended up working with the builder still, but I drew on what Chris, the kind of person Chris was, which was a compassionate, fair man who was prepared to find a way forward, to listen to the challenges of everybody and effectively to mediate. And that was kind of the approach I took. That was Chris guiding and supporting me, albeit physically not next to my side.
So he's been with you as you've been moving on?
Yes, he has, very much so.
And that's something that people do forget, that just because they're no longer with us physically, all those years and that relationship still counts for something.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I think it's because I took that the pause I described earlier to acknowledge who he was to me, what he meant to me. I found that space where, away from everybody's expectations, to really acknowledge the relationship that I had with Chris and what he gave me and continues to give me. That was the difference that made the difference in enabling me to move on.
When Hilary and I did our marriage preparation way back in 1977, we were asked the question, what will you do if one or either of you dies? Which is quite a, when you're in your early 20s, that's something you don't consider. And we gave it some thought and said we wanted the other person to be happy.
Yes.
And when Hilary died, I knew that's what she wanted me to do, to be happy, but with COVID and everything else, I was not going to be able to go out and meet other people. It was too soon to go out and meet other people. And then September came, and things started to reopen, and you and I know about Friends Together in Tunbridge Wells. Went along to that, and I went to a group where I thought nobody would know me. And then, of course, lockdown happened again.
Yeah.
So Christmas lunch was cancelled. And then come the spring, I thought, I'm getting so fed up sitting here, not being able to do anything. I went on to a couple of online sites. Well, there were three online sites. One, I came off straight away because all they were interested in sending me people from America and Australia. The other one was set up by a radio station, and there was a few local people there, but nothing clicked.
Yeah.
So the third one, it was more of a friendship site. And so I got chatting to a few people there, went out with two of them, and we're friends, but it was nothing more than that. A third one, well, we're getting married in July, so I think something worked there. Leo Sayer, When I Need You, here on West Kent today with Ms. Laura Too. We've been talking about grief and celebration, and you know, when you're suddenly bereaved, there's a lot of people giving you what they think is good advice, but sometimes that advice is not something that we particularly need. I remember when I had depression, somebody said I could take their dog out for a walk. Well, I hate walking and I don't like dogs. No, that's not exactly true. I do like dogs, but why should I take their dog out for a walk? So how do we nourish ourselves during a time of grief? Because that can be a long period of time.
Yeah, it can be a very, very long period of time, John. I think as human beings, we're not very good at self-nourishing. And you know, we've talked before about the idea that when somebody we've lost has gone, we haven't got that connection, that those cuddles, that nourishing feeling. So we actually have to work much harder to self-nourish. We need to find our space because we need to be able to hear our own voice about what it is that we need. And if the world around us is really, really busy, we're not going to hear that voice. We're going to get swayed into what everybody else needs for us. May only be, you know, take yourself off for a walk on your own. You just sit in quiet contemplation and write some thoughts into a book. For me, it's to swim and listen to some music while I'm swimming. That is enough for me to shut out the outside world, to focus on what it is I need. I know my mother takes to the garden, and that is it's her self-nourishing moment where she can just pause, reflect, just think in the moment without everything else going on, and that nourishes her. We all have our own, you know, rest prescription. We need to find what's right for us.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Laura. It's been a lovely morning talking about these things. You'll be back again in next month in June. Yes. And the celebrations will then probably be dying down, but we'll have a look at another subject. So, Laura, thank you for joining me this morning.